Chapter 22. The mechanical geyser vibrated with excitement as it bobbed down the hall, its steel tentacles weaving intricate patterns. A soft chattering emanated from within its metallic shell, the constant muffled conversations of the various sprites that animated Barty Fisser's creation. Gorm stamped along behind it. The floorboards of the Red Sow creaked beneath his heavy boots. His limbs were stiff and aching, the price of prolonged riding on an elven steed. Everybody knew they moved half again as fast as a normal horse, but nobody talked about how doing so made you twice as saddle sore in a third of the time. The mechanical geyser seemed enamored with one room near the back of the hall. It hovered back and forth around the door, squeaking softly to itself. As Gorm approached, the construct swiveled around, opened its jaw with a mechanical snap, and loosed a chorus of erratic, excited gibbering.
"She's in there! In there! Behind the door! Open the door!"
"Fine, fine, I heard you. Shut your trap,"
Gorm grumbled, flipping the geyser's jaw closed as he stepped up to the door. He paused for a deep breath before knocking three times.
"Come in," said a tired voice.
Gorm pushed the door open and stepped into the modest room, helm in his hands.
"Hello, lass."
"I didn't expect to see you again."
Katha was curled up on an old mattress, her left arm and both legs wrapped in long bandages. She looked frail, a weak shade of herself, a withered blossom.
"Well, I ain't the sort for quittin'," said Gorm as he approached the bed.
"Oh, I know."
The elf wouldn't look him in the eye. Instead, she stared out a grimy window at the gray, drizzly sky.
"But I know myself as well. I drive people away. My old adventuring parties, my agent, even the king in the wood.
And I hang on to things once I've made up my mind."
Gorm sat in a simple oak chair near the bed.
"And on that subject, I'm getting the party back together. I want you to help me track 'em down."
Katha gave a small, joyless laugh.
"You don't need me. You've got that flying contraption with the sprites."
"Aye, but the bastard that built it tells me it has trouble tracking mages, which is nearly half the job. Besides, I want a tracker that I don't perpetually want to punch."
They both looked at the mechanical geyser, which erupted into a tiny, inquisitive cacophony.
"Why are they looking here? What's she doing? What did he say?"
"I said shut it,"
growled Gorm. The mechanical geyser snapped its jaw shut.
"I still don't know, Gorm," said Katha. "Honestly, I don't know if I'd be helping or hurting your cause. I'm a disaster these days."
"Aye, that's why you fit right in with us," said Gorm.
Katha laughed again, genuinely this time, but she only shook her head and continued staring out the window.
"What happened to ye, lass?" Gorm asked eventually.
The elf watched dark clouds sweeping over the hamlet of Ebonmire.
"I've been asking myself that for a long time."
"I meant to your arms and legs."
He nodded to the bandages.
"Oh,"
Katha shrugged.
"The Mirewood."
"And you don't want a healing potion?"
"Oh, I want one," she said, looking at Gorm with a sudden intensity. "I've been lying in bed for weeks just thinking about how badly I want a healing potion. I want one so bad it burns. It just doesn't burn as much as the memory of withdrawal, the shame of what I've done for a kick. Never again, Gorm. Never again."
"Feels good to hear you say as much."
"Well, I'm happy for you. It feels thrice cursed awful from this side."
She waved a hand at her bloodied leg.
"A bogling got me in the thigh, and their venom stings like dragon fire. I swear the Mirewood is one of the hells."
Gorm nodded.
"Honestly, I thought I'd have to go in myself to find ye when that little flying golem led me this way. I assumed ye'd gone after Thane."
"I did. He isn't there."
Katha shook her head.
"The innkeeper told me the swamp's been more dangerous without the king in the wood around, but I went in anyway."
"No sign of him?"
Katha sighed and looked back out the window.
"I found the garden he used to keep, but it's dead, choked with swamp vines. A blighted crocatrice is nesting in the middle of it now. He's gone, and I have no idea where else to look."
Gorm cursed inwardly. If Thane hadn't returned to the Mirewood, there was no telling where the troll was.
"I'm sorry, Katha," he said, "for everything. I should have told you—"
"I wasn't angry at you,"
the ranger interrupted.
"Well, I was, but I shouldn't have been. I was mostly angry at myself. I've been traveling with a kobold for more than a year, and Tibrin before him. I've been working hard to convince the Gizvarda we were friends, and still I see a troll, and I— I just assume he's a monster. She shook her head. And I'm angry with him as well, honestly. Why would he hide from me? I was talking to him, Gorm. If he had found almost any other way to introduce himself...
He was scared, lass, Gorm sighed, of what you'd do if you found out he was a troll.
But not everyone else, the elf asked bitterly. I mean, what was so wrong with me that he assumed the worst? Or then again, what's so wrong with me that I would prove him right?
Nothing's wrong with you.
Caitha turned back to Gorm, her eyebrows raised in profound skepticism.
Let's not pay lip service.
Fine, but whatever is wrong with you can't hold a candle to all that's good in you, said Gorm. You're the Jade Bloody Wind, one of the finest heroes ever to walk Earth.
If that was true, I don't think I would have wound up here.
Caitha gestured at her bandages.
Gorm put a hand on her shoulder. If it wasn't true, I wouldn't have come here after you.
The elf shook her head. You're different.
You're thrice cursed right we are, said Gorm. Now, are you coming?
Caitha laughed despite herself.
Why are you doing this? Handor's dead, Gorm. Who will you hold a grudge against now? The orcs still hate us. We can't best Dutar. We failed.
First of all, never tell a dwarf he can't hold a grudge. Gorm held up his index finger. We can always find someone worthy of a good grudge. Johan is still out there plotting, and nobody's touched gold's on her bags.
True enough.
Second, said Gorm, counting on his fingers, I have an idea that may get us back into the good graces of the Gisvarda, and more importantly, get them into the good graces of the Freedlands. And third, we couldn't beat Dutar. That doesn't mean we can't. This time's different.
How so?
I've got a plan for getting the staff back.
You had the staff before. You'd need an army.
Gorm grinned.
I'm pretty sure I can get one of those as well.
The elf shook her head with a smirk.
Well, what your plan lacks in specifics, it makes up for in absurdity.
We find the party, we get them back together, we save the world. Everything else is just details, the dwarf said. Point is, the undead are threatening everything, and whatever comes of it, there's only going to be two kinds of people in the end, those that gave it everything, and those that quit.
He stood.
We both know which group I belong to. Which one will ye be in?
Oh, don't make a mummer's play of it.
The elf chided him as she shifted her legs over the edge of her bed.
You already know my answer.
Wouldn't have come all this way if I didn't.
Gorm extended a hand to the ranger.
But it's good to see I was right.
Turn left!
I ain't turning left!
Gorm twisted around in his saddle to shout at the mechanical gazer.
There isn't even a bloody intersection here! Where is there even a left to turn on?
I think it means that game trail, said Caitha, pointing to a small gap in the undergrowth. It's just confused.
There's an understatement, grumbled the dwarf. At least we must be getting close to them wizards if their magics are scrambling the sprites this much.
Turn around,
pleaded the mechanical gazer as it bobbed along behind them. The construct had brought Gorm and Caitha to the northeastern edge of the green span after they left Ebonmire, but over the past day it had grown increasingly disoriented. Now it seemed convinced that its target was somewhere in the middle of Drakehead Lake.
Make a U-turn! Take the next available left!
Is there a way to turn it off?
Caitha asked.
I don't think so, short of taking an axe to it, said Gorm.
Let's not rule out any options, said Caitha. But for now, I think we're getting close. Look, there isn't supposed to be anything but an old ruin out this way, but a lot of carts and horses have been through here as of late.
Could be trouble, said Gorm.
It could be a conclave of omnomancers, said Caitha.
Same thing.
Turn around at the next intersection,
screamed the gazer. Gorm sighed and spurred his mount on. The ruins of an old granite fort came into view just before noon. Ramshackle wooden structures were haphazardly perched atop the crumbling ramparts and fallen towers, and long black banners with a strange gray symbol hung from the windows, gently flapping in a spring breeze. Gorm and Caitha dismounted and tethered the mechanical gazer to a tree before approaching the fort's gate. A thin slot in the door opened before Caitha could knock.
"And what exactly is it that you want?"
said a muffled voice.
"We're looking for a friend," said Gorm. "You won't find any here. Try taking up a hobby or talking to people in pubs."
The tiny peephole slammed shut.
"Clever git," Gorm growled, and hammered on the door three times.
The slot opened once more.
"We don't take visitors!" "And I don't take no for an answer," Gorm barked. "We've come to see a specific friend. Jin's his name.
How do you even know he's in here? Said the hidden guard.
There's two ways to find out, said Gorm, but only one of them involves a battle axe.
Ha! This gate is made from solid oak with steel bracers and is enchanted with the secret words of the Fae Nomada,
the guard crowed.
Your axe won't do much against it.
Perhaps, said Caitha, but the wall over there is patched up with some pine boards and a broken barrel.
There was a thoughtful silence.
Those have wards too?
The guard suggested.
I could check for you, said Gorm, brandishing his axe.
No, no, said the guard. We can make an exception for you, but you'll have to leave your weapons in the gatehouse.
Gorm shrugged. If you really think that'll make us less dangerous.
The door clanked as it was unlocked, then creaked open to reveal a young, knock-kneed man in an omnimancer's ragged gray robes. He scuttled back to a relatively safe distance and then pointed to a wooden bin where Gorm and Caitha deposited axe and bow, respectively. Once they were disarmed, the wizard pushed open the inner door, or more accurately, he began a laborious attempt to push open the inner door. The entryway had been built to withstand a siege, and the Omnimancer had been built for a life of reading in the corner, so the way was opened with more struggling than ceremony. Caitha leaned close to Gorm as they watched the frail man labor.
I'm glad the guard could be intimidated, but if we're going to get Jin on our side, it can't all be about threats and violence.
Oh, come now. We made our careers on threats and violence, Gorm snorted. We got paid because sometimes threats and violence are the only way anything gets done.
Sometimes, conceded Caitha, but if we want to convince him to fight for us, we need to stay calm and make a compelling case.
If you say so, said Gorm, unable to conceal his doubt.
The panting wizard finally finished opening the door and ushered them into the courtyard. The grounds beyond were teeming with omnimancers. Young men and women in gray robes stared at them from every corner of the courtyard, looked down from the ramparts, and peeked out from the windows of the inner keep.
They might be dangerous, Caitha whispered in his ear.
Gorm glanced over to a makeshift training ground where a group of omnimancers were practicing their weaving. One of the older mages attempted to hurl a spell at a burlap target. Nothing came of it except a few pathetic sparks of sorcery.
I'm pretty sure we'll be fine, he said to Caitha.
They hadn't made it halfway across the courtyard before an omnimancer in a tall, plumed hat burst from the keep and stormed toward them. He was decidedly plump for a man living in the middle of some overgrown ruins, and his gray robes were decorated with a multitude of feathers and other trinkets. His beard was thin and curled, and put Gorm in mind of moss clinging to a stone.
What is the meaning of this? He screeched. Rob, you were to drive off all who dare approach our fortress.
Rob muttered an apology and kicked at the gravel.
And you!
The omnimancer in the ridiculous hat turned to Gorm and Caitha in turn.
You would dare to trespass in the lair of the Fae Nomada?
The discussion was momentarily interrupted by a commotion from the communal gardens on the east wall, where a young omnimancer was waving her arms to avoid falling off a stack of barrels. Her wild gesticulations sprayed twisting threads of elemental magic in every direction, scattering the omnimancers around her. An errant bolt of sorcery flew into the henhouse, and after a moment of ominous clucking, something hideous, scaled, and vaguely resembling poultry lurched from the coop and began chasing screaming mages around the courtyard.
Yes, said Caitha.
Oh, for the love of Musana, Wilt just hit it with a shovel! The shovel! The one in your hand!
The omnimancer in the hat was crimson-faced when he turned back to the adventurers.
Ugh, very well. What do you want, anyway? I'm very busy.
Clearly.
Caitha tried to hide a smirk and failed.
We're looking for our friend, said Gorm. Thin, human, always looks like he's sick, black goatee. Know where he is?
Do I know?
Laughed the omnimancer.
Why, you stand before Wrathwine, High Amata of the Fane. I am the master of night and day, of ice and fire, of enigma and paradox. I alone have seen the Tet Ahua rise above the emerald infinity. All secrets of the gloaming are at my command.
So you're the head wizard here, said Caitha.
We are not wizards,
snapped Wrathwine. Gorm watched an omnimancer throw a spell at the rampaging ex-chicken.
The magical missile missed its target, ricocheted off a wall, and struck the caster's face hard enough to knock him to the ground.
"Well, I'll grant you that," he said.
Rathwine sniffed and waved a dismissive hand.
"We have moved beyond your petty concepts of mages and wizards and heroes. We are the Fane Armada, the Secret Keepers. We know the names of the four..."
"Right, right," said Gorm. "But you know where Jin is?"
"Yes, fine. Brother Jin chooses to regard the mysteries of many things in the Chamber of Silence," said Rathwine.
"He what now?"
The High Armada sighed.
"He's studying in the library, if you must speak of things in the old ways."
"And where is the library?" asked Gorm.
"You will have found it when you come upon the third portal on the Weaveward side."
Caitha thought for a moment.
"So that's the third door on the..." "The left, fine. The third door on the left,"
conceded Rathwine, pointing to the keep. The courtyard rang out with renewed screams as the foul abomination cornered a cluster of Fane Armada.
"Excuse me, I've got to deal with this."
"Don't let us keep you," said Caitha. Rathwine set off across the courtyard without so much as a nod.
"I said to use the shovel, Wilt!"
"Omnimancers," muttered Caitha under her breath.
"Aye, bar me to the last," said Gorm. "Come on, let's go find ours."
They found Jin seated at a large table in the center of the library in the Fane Armada's keep. The walls were lined with glass cases. Papers and notes blanketed the furniture and floor around the recent Omnimancer, including several pages carefully balanced atop patches. The dog lay dutifully next to his old master, motionless except for the thumping of his tail on the floor, as Gorm and Caitha approached. Jin didn't look up from the page.
"I didn't expect to see you again."
"Didn't expect to have to come all the way out here to find you," said Gorm. "What are you doing with this lot?"
Jin gestured at the papers surrounding him.
"Researching my father's work, trying to figure out what he was planning."
"I'm fairly certain he's marching for Andoran," Gorm said.
"The bannermen are evacuating Aberyth," Caitha added. Jin glanced up at them just long enough to be condescending.
"Yes, I'm well aware of his current plans. I'm researching the Leviathan Project."
"The one you and your father were working on before he died?" asked Caitha.
"The one that he and some other mages were working on," Jin corrected her. "Father may have let me see an experiment from time to time, but he didn't trust me with his plans. I knew that it was a secret project and that it involved live test subjects, but I didn't put it all together until Father unleashed the hellhound and the, fire pig?"
"Demon boar," suggested Gorm. "No, I think it was another boar."
"Ah, yes. Gods, it's like he has an involuntary reflex for the grandiose."
Jin reached down to scratch Patches behind the ears.
"Regardless, it was no coincidence that Patches and the dead pig appeared after we killed the infernal beasts. I realized that it must have something to do with the Leviathan Project, and so I came here to research it."
"Here?" Caitha's doubt was punctuated by a final-sounding squawk from the chicken beast outside. Jin gave an apologetic shrug.
"The Fane Armada are misguided, but if they're good for anything..."
"Doubtful," Gorm muttered.
"It's collecting hidden knowledge," continued Jin, ignoring the interruption. "Forgotten tomes, runic glossaries, compiled notes, exactly what I need for my investigation."
"I can believe that," said Caitha, looking over at the glass cases lining the wall. "Just look at all of these old books."
"They've assembled an impressive collection of forbidden grimoires," said Jin. "Encyclopedia Demonica, the Seven Cryptical Books of Solemn, a translation of the Alphatic Shards, the Psalms Monocoli. The list goes on."
"What's this one?"
asked Gorm, picking up the only tome not locked within a glass case.
"That's perhaps the most powerful book never written," said Jin.
"It's all blank."
Gorm flipped through the empty pages.
"No, wait, there's a line at the front."
Gorm read the small, neat script on the page aloud.
Imbalanced. Too powerful. Breaks mechanics.
He lowered the book and looked about in consternation.
What the bloody bones is that supposed to mean?
That's the Retconomicon, said Jin, a book of forbidden chronomancy. Or it would have been if it hadn't written itself out of reality.
A book that unwrote itself? Gorham gave a small chuckle. That don't sound so powerful.
The Omnimancer shrugged. It changed the fabric of the universe. It could have unmade and remade lives, brought the dead back en masse, or destroyed Arth outright. It might have done all of those things multiple times before redacting itself, and nobody on Arth, now or ever before, would know it. Gorm carefully set the book down.
What do they keep in this one?
Asked Katha, pointing to a wooden case near the back of the room. It was covered in glowing runes, chalk circles, and other arcane symbols that were individually indecipherable, but collectively conveyed a clear warning.
That's the Ordo Diluculum, an ancient book outlining the functions and teachings of the Twilight Order before it fell. It was written by Omnimancers in the Third Age.
That one must be fairly tempting for you, said Gorm.
Not in the least, said Jin. I came here to study the same runes and rituals my father did, and to do that I need darker texts. The notes Aya of Blades gave me indicate that father and his colleagues were combining demonology and low magic.
Bones, gasped Katha.
Gorm felt his blood run cold. Demonology was among the darkest of dark sorceries, considered worse than necromancy in many circles. After all, everything summoned by the necromantic arts had at least had business on Arth at one point, but demons were never meant to be in the mortal realms. Low magic might have been even worse. It was the magic of the Sten, the rituals and rites that changed fate and bound the gods.
What could drive a wizard to that? Gorm wondered aloud. No, wait, never mind. It's...
immortality, said Jin and Katha at the same time.
Aye, of course it's bloody wizards and their thrice-cursed immortality, said Gorm. Whenever there's some terrible darkness anywhere on Arth, it's a good bet an old mage decided that he shouldn't have to shovel off this mortal coil, even if it means shoving everyone else off it instead.
We're all familiar with the lengths my father would go to for the sake of avoiding death, said Jin, but you'll recall that the Leviathan Project was commissioned by the Freedlands and Ruskin.
Fair enough, said Gorm. I don't see how any of this relates to demonic pigs and dogs.
It's the story of the Leviathan, said Jin. When the gods vanquished the great darkness Manon, he bound himself to a fish. In time, the fish became the Leviathan.
And you believe that the ultimate evil possessed a fish? Said Katha.
Not possessed, said Jin. Possession is when a supernatural entity forces a mortal to act against its own will.
So it was more like an incarnation, said Katha.
No, that's when a supernatural being is born into a mortal form, said Jin. There's no original mortal bound up in that process.
I thought that was an avatar, said Gorm.
The maid shook his head. An avatar is a supernatural being lending its power to a mortal to achieve a mutual purpose.
I think I fought some cultists like that back when I was running with Crimson Justice, said Katha. When we killed the strongest of them, Yasathar Soth the Fog Demon burst out and attacked.
That sounds more like a dark pact, said Jin. That's when an evil force inhabits a willing mortal to gain access to our reality. It's set free on Arth when the mortal dies.
I thought that's what happened with Manon and the Leviathan, said Katha.
And it all sounds like possession to me, said Gorm.
There are similarities, but there are important differences, Jin explained. My father and his colleagues believed Manon and the Great Fish were tied together in death by prophecy and fate. Aya of Blades called the resulting creature soulbound in her notes, which is the term father used for patches and the pig.
I believe soul-binding requires both the mortal and the supernatural to occupy parallel threads in the weave's matrix with a concurrent termination point.
Beg pardon? Said Gorm.
For lack of better terms, they have to die at the same time. Jin made little quotation marks with his fingers as he spoke. Gorm noticed that he still wore the long black glove over his left hand. Though it's inaccurate to apply words like die or time to demons and the greater powers. But if you think of it that way, the story of the Leviathan makes more sense. If the Lord of Darkness could escape judgment by binding himself to any soul, why choose a fish? But if you narrow the candidates for soul binding to mortals that died in a particular instant, a fish may have been the best choice available.
Well, desperate times, I suppose, Gorm said.
Jin nodded. Regardless, my father's associates never saw any soul-bound come from their experiments, and assumed they had failed. But based on the writings in the Soraparimo and the Shadar Kaz manuscript, I believe the type of low magic used in soul-binding creates meta-distortions in the weave. The resulting variable shift chronologically displaces the subjects at terminal events.
You might as well skip the gibberish and just do the quote thing again, said Gorm.
When a soulbound is created, it's shifted forward in time, said Jin. It appears minutes, months, years, or centuries after the death of the bound souls.
This is sounding less and less like immortality, Kaitha said.
Agreed. But the bound souls may not be lost forever, said Jin. There is a shorter chronolateral move when a soulbound is killed. Death restores both the mortal and the supernatural to their rightful state. The legends say that within a day of the death of the Leviathan, Manon reemerged in the heavens. Theoretically, a fish could have rematerialized back in the sea as well, though that detail failed to make history.
Just like a demon and patches came back after we killed the hellhound, said Gorm.
Jin scratched the dog behind the ear. Exactly.
And you solved all this in a few weeks.
Oh, nothing's been solved, said Jin. It's just a theory, and one with more questions than answers. Patches was a puppy when Father performed his experiments. I don't know why he's a full-grown dog now. And why was he alive after the death of the soulbound when the pig didn't survive the same transition? What brought the dog back? How long did it take the hellhound to appear on Arth, and why was it less than a few decades? I could spend a lifetime studying this.
I have a different proposition, said Gorm.
I didn't think this was a simple friendly visit, sighed Jin. I'm guessing you're attempting to reunite the party and stop my father.
Aye, said Gorm.
It's a fool's errand, said Jin. Leave the lich to the guild and the bannermen. They're better suited to the task.
You don't sound convinced, said Kaitha.
The wizard sighed. Perhaps not, but I believe that if they can't defeat him, we can't either. What would we bring to the fight that the guild cannot?
An omnimancer, said Gorm.
Jin's scowl drew deep trenches across his face. Do not call me that. I may wear gray robes and reside with the Fane Amada, but I am still a noctomancer at heart.
You wove solomancy, said Kaitha.
Only once, said Jin, and under what can only be described as extreme duress.
But you wove it, said Gorm. You saved Laruna with a cure spell. Could a noctomancer do that? Could one of them Faden Tamadas do it?
Jin narrowed his eyes. The principles of magic have enough similarities,
and ye know them, said Gorm. Because you're a thrice-cursed brilliant wizard, Jin, trained by the Academy. You were the big poobah of the Blue Bird.
High counselor of the Circle of the Red Hawk, Jin interjected.
Even better, said Gorm. Your Faint Amada don't have any of that. They ain't wizards.
A wayward spell flew in through the window, bounced off the ceiling, and set one of Jin's papers alight.
Sorry!
Someone shouted from the courtyard. I'll grant you that. Jin extinguished the smoldering note with a gust of wind.
Arth ain't seen a wizard such as ye for ages, said Gorm. The sort of mage the Wormwood staff was made for, the kind who can master all a wizard's virtues.
No, snapped Jin, slamming his hands down on the table. I can see what you're getting at, Gorm, and even if I thought your mad errand might be possible, I wouldn't go along with it. I will not be an omnomancer.
But you can cast both. I have been able to touch both sides of the weave since I was a boy, yet I have always been, and am still today, a noctomancer.
Jin took a deep breath and composed himself. If I focus on casting only noctomancy, my robes will eventually return to their true color, and once they do, I can take a new name and rejoin the Order of the Moon.
Assuming your father hasn't wiped him out, said Gorm,
you'd risk them all for the sake of fancy robes and silly titles.
For the sake of having a life worth living, hissed Jin. I'd rather father burn me to ashes than spend my years in the gutter as an omnomancer.
It can't be that bad, said Gorm.
It's worse. The common man mistrusts wizards and magic users, and wizards and magic users mistrust omnomancers. They are exiles among exiles. Jin shook his head and stared out the window. The Twilight Order is nothing more than a stain left on history. So long as I wear these robes, all I can do is live like some sort of sorceress leper among these untrained fools, and hope I don't die in one of their experiments. A loud explosion and a flash of violet light somewhere outside the windows punctuated the last sentiment.
So don't wear robes, said Gorm. Change your thrice-cursed clothes.
Shave your beard off, the wizard retorted. Gorm and Katha gasped in unison.
How dare ye?
Exactly, said Jin. I will not take off my robes, nor will I weave omnomancy. It isn't who I am.
You don't know who you are, said Katha softly.
Jin glared at her. What?
You don't know who you are. You only know what will happen if you aren't the person everyone expects.
The elf ran a finger along the edge of her jade bracers.
Trust me, wizard, I've been more rich and famous than you've dreamt of, and all it ever made me feel was pain and fear of losing it. Success and status are a gilded cage, but when you let go of those things, or life takes them from you, the expectations don't matter anymore. Strip it all away, and nothing can hurt you. You lose the fear.
She shook her head and looked at the wizard.
Except you haven't. Your old status means nothing now, but you're still hanging on to the idea of what you should be, hiding from what you could be. You're still scared.
The wizard shook his head.
You don't know me,
he managed.
Then that makes two of us, said Katha, turning to leave. Come on, Gorm. You can't help someone who won't help himself.
Jenner Mayan watched the elf and dwarf leave the library with bleary eyes. He doubted he could have kept his voice level had he spoken to them again, and the gods knew he was embarrassed enough without his vocal cords cracking like a scared apprentice. Patches whimpered. Don't worry, I'm fine, Jin lied. For a time he sat staring at the black glove on his left hand. He flexed it once or twice, wincing at the numbness of the appendage. He couldn't feel his fingers moving, or the leather of the glove against their tips. Then again, he couldn't feel any pain, either. He could hear Katha's words in his head.
Strip it all away, and nothing can hurt you.
He shoved away from the table, scattering papers and prompting Patches to leap up excitedly. The dog danced around his heels as he paced the length of the library. No, Patches, it's not time for walkies, muttered the wizard. I need to think. I need to clear my head. He trailed off as he realized that he had stopped in front of the rune-encrusted case containing the Ordo Diluculum, the Book of the Twilight Order. He stood still, staring down at the case. In his mind's eye, he could see the rows and rows of boxes where he had tucked away a lifetime of memories and emotions. One in particular drew his attention,
a small spot in the back where he had tucked away his memories of experimenting with omnimancy. The knowledge that it was there, that he could touch both sides of magic, had haunted him for most of his life, but he hadn't let himself touch the box or recall the memories within for years. With a deep breath, Jin opened the box. Memories swirled into his mind. He recalled a child, barely older than a toddler, pulling fire from the air as easily as he pulled shadow. He remembered the bruise that formed on his tiny hand as his attunement fell out of balance. He could still hear the way Mother screamed when she saw it, feel his relief when she told him that she was only upset about the wound, not the magic. But Father felt differently. He remembered Dattar correcting him, not harshly. He was never cold until after Mother died, but still firmly speaking to his son. "Jin, you must never cast Solomancy," Dattar had said. "When Omnimancy tempts you, remember who you are. If you give in, you'll shame our order. You'll shame the name of Ermion." "I'm not sure how that name could be shamed much more at this point," the Omnimancer muttered. He shut the mental box of memories and heard Katha's voice again. "Strip it all away, and nothing can hurt you." He waved his right hand, and the amateurish enchantments of the Fane Amada blew away like dust in the wind. Another gesture popped the glass lid open, exposing the Ordo Diluculum. It had a pebbled gray leather cover, with inlaid precious metals and stones weaving complex patterns across its ancient surface. "You lose the fear." His father's voice echoed from the depths of Jin's memory, refusing to be shut away entirely. "When Omnimancy tempts you, remember who you are." "How could I remember who I am?" he said to himself, picking up the tome. "I'm still finding out." The text was in pre-Imperial Dalish, but the Fane Amada kept a few translation glasses handy. The thick lens cast the book below in various shades of green and showed the ancient script in modern Imperial. Holding the glass over the book's first page, he could see that it opened with a bold salutation. "Welcome, Initiate, to the greatest order of wizardry on Arth." "History might say otherwise," the wizard murmured as he turned to the page. He scanned through the pages of the book. The opening chapters were devoted to a lengthy treatise on the Order's history at the point of writing, some mundane notes on the layout and living arrangements in the Tower of Dusk, an outline of the heraldry and functions of the various circles within the Order, and near the end of the opening section, a closing letter to new apprentices by the Archmage Livella. A paragraph near the bottom caught his attention. "It has been my experience that some initiates are unhappy to discover that they will be counted among the Omnimancers. They wish to join the larger orders, where they believe there is more power to be gained. Such thinking is folly. You cannot reach your full potential using only half of your magic. If you reject who you are, you will never become the person you could be." Jin's hands began to tremble. He turned the page as if to escape from the words, but that only brought him into the chapters on advanced spellweaving. The tremors in his limbs graduated into violent shaking. "Permanent illusions," he muttered, flipping through page after page of complex spell diagrams. "Teleportation. Short-range displacements without a focal component. Conjured metal. Permanent conjurations. Scrying at will. Counterspells. Counterweaving." Jin recalled old legends of Omnimancers performing impossible feats with sorcery, spells that couldn't be woven by collaborating Solomancers and Noctomancers. Those spells had been lost to time with the fall of the Order of Twilight. It was only now dawning on him that such secrets could be rediscovered. Power that no mage had dreamed of for ages was quite literally at his fingertips. He read for hours. Each page opened up entirely new disciplines of magic to him, spelling out techniques and secrets that he'd always presumed were legends. Diagrams of arcane devices and artifacts were littered among the spells and runes. He recognized a few types of attunement orbs, including a useful-looking variant set in a ring or amulet. There were scrying pools, reservoir gems, way gates with great crystals set atop their arches, and more than a few devices that Jin couldn't even identify. Near the back was a drawing of a long stave inscribed with ancient languages, with a dragon's claw clutching a glowing orb at one end. The wormwood staff. Jin shook his head and turned the page again. He flipped past the technical diagrams and sections on advanced theory to a thin chapter on philosophy at the end of the book. These pages were more worn and fragile, likely because they were the only parts of the book that the untrained mages of the Fae Nomada could comprehend. One passage in particular stood out. "We do not police the other orders. That is, we do not use our magic to impose our laws or will upon them. But the pursuit of balance often drives us to rebuke the Noctomancer whose quest for mastery has gone too far, or to restrain the Solomancer who lusts after too much power. Not necessarily because they are wrong, but because the Omnomancers can only thrive when we are in balance, and one cannot be in balance when the world has gone askew. Thus, our path to the wizard's virtues is also the path to common good. In serving others, we advance ourselves. In serving ourselves, we better the world for others. We are not selfish, nor selfless, for either way would lead us to the same destination. The Omnomancer's path is always clear."
Jin set the book down.
His path was clear. Patches wagged his tail and danced in circles as the wizard tucked the Ordo Diluculum and the translation glass into his satchel.
"Yes, Patches, we're going out," Jin murmured as he closed the book's case and rewove the protective enchantments over it. Then he left the library, collected his possessions from the Fae Nomada's sleeping quarters, and hurried out the door of the keep. The dog ran at his heels as he trotted down the steps. The sun was setting over the forest, but if he could ride through the night, he could still catch them. It might take some scrying to locate the dwarf, but those spells were available to Jin for the first time. A smile spread over the wizard's face as he hurried toward the stables, already planning spells of divination to locate his friends.
"Where are you going?" said Gorm.
Jin skidded to a halt in the loose earth of the courtyard. Gorm and Katha were sitting on a pair of crates, sharing a platter of meat.
"You're still here," said the wizard.
"We figured it'd take you a while. Besides, there was free chicken for dinner," said Gorm.
"Of a sort," added Katha, brushing a scale from her drumstick.
"That's good enough," said Gorm, feeding a scrap to Patches. "Sit and have a bite with us. We've a long ride ahead of us tonight if we're to make good time."
Yeah. Sure. I just... Jin shook his head as he pulled up a crate. "I was getting ready to follow you. I assumed you'd have given up and left without me."
"I guess we knew you better than that," said Katha.
"I suppose you did," said the Omnomancer with a smile.